powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
This is Jake and Stacy on 710 ESPN Seattle. Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacy Ross.
Oh, happy Friday, you guys. Look who's back in the building. Look who's in studio. It's Jake Heaps, fresh from San Diego. Looking bronzed, beaming, glowing after meeting your icon there, Drew Brees.
Yeah.
Wow. What was that like?
That was amazing.
Did you play it cool? Did you embarrass us?
No, I didn't embarrass you, but I am nervous that I played it a little too cool.
What do you mean?
Like, you get in those moments, and I really truly believe that I've never been one of those guys that has freaked out when you're around celebrities or you're around high-profile athletes. I've just never been like that. And you try not to be that way. Like, for example, when you're trying to go in the locker room and you're a rookie and you meet Darrelle Revis for the first time, right? You're just trying to be their teammate, right? But when it's Drew Brees and you're meeting somebody for the first time and it could be your only time, like, think about it, right? If you met J-Lo and you only had, let's say, a 30-minute interaction with them.
Oh, my God.
Right? Like, put yourself in your shoes. Like, what do you do? You don't necessarily want to come across like you're this crazy fan person.
But you want them to like, that you want them to think you're cool.
Yes,
like,
you do.
I'm a celebrity, too.
Yeah,
okay?
You do. And so you're in this really weird spot. You want to make a good first impression,
right? Did you call him by the wrong name? What did you do?
Yeah, I mean, I was like, so have you played before?
No,
I'm just kidding. Could you imagine if I had done that?
Where does Russ know you from? you guys go to school together?
Man, you look really familiar.
You said it was Don?
Are you a golfer? I don't know. It was amazing. I mean, it was really cool. I mean, Drew is incredibly down to earth, and he was awesome, you know, while we were there, and it was really, really cool. And, you know, getting a chance to talk ball with him and having him even ask, you know, me questions on stuff and what we're doing, and so anyways, it was really, really fun to have him there. And it just goes to show that, you know, when you look at what Russell's doing in the offseason and the changes and how he is just obsessed with trying to get better each and every single year. You know, he's kind of revamped his team. He's added Tim Grover to his team, which is, if anybody, you know, paid attention to, you know, The Last Dance or basketball fans in general, that's Michael Jordan's trainer. That's Kobe Bryant's trainer. And Grover's very selective about who he tries to pair with, and paired with Russ this offseason. And so we just tried to add more things to what we do. And it's been really, really cool. And, you know, just having Drew Brees come in and drop some knowledge and talk some ball was one of the coolest things that I've been a part of.
I can't wait for, if it happens again, you to ever meet Drew Brees, for Drew to forget your name and for you to just like roll with it. Because it's that level of, I'm not kidding you guys. Jake, if you asked, I know this because he's mentioned it so many times. Drew Brees is Jake's like iconic quarterback. Yeah,
he's my idol. Like
imagine the person that you as a teen or young adult would have been like, oh my God, I would die.
Oh yeah. No doubt about it. So
I will say in your picture, at JT Heaps 9, Jake to Twitter posted a photo of him and Russ, and Will Disley was there, and a bunch of trainers and everyone meeting Drew Brees. They all took a picture. Had to feel cool being like one of the tallest guys there.
Man, it was a thrill. It's a real thrill. I'll just tell you that.
In
my football career, and especially in the quarterback room, like I was considered a small quarterback.
Yeah, being 6'1",
6'1" to 6'2",
my apologies,
depending on the measuring scale
and the number of socks you're wearing.
Exactly. Or if I stuffed my socks, you know, it was. I was always considered a smaller quarterback. Hence the reason. One of the reasons why I love Drew Brees. But when I was in Seattle, I was the tallest guy in the room. It was like the most liberating.
Surreal.
It was amazing. It was Russell Wilson and Trevon Boykin, and I was the tallest guy. It felt amazing. In that situation, it felt great again. So I revel in those situations, because usually you're around guys like Brock who are like 6'4 and 6'5 and just towering. It felt good.
Well, speaking of Russell Wilson, we've got an interesting debate that Paul Gallant posed. We'll get to that coming up in about 30 minutes at 11:45. His question was, have we already seen the best of Russell Wilson? So Jake has an answer for that. Again, we're going to get to that in 30. We've also got some Mariners roster moves we're going to talk with Mike Salk about at 11:30. Before we get to any of that, though, we were having a conversation, the three of us, DJ and you, Jake, about which side of the ball needs to succeed in order for the Seahawks to get back to a Super Bowl. And this is a version of a conversation that we're going to be having all offseason as different developments are made on either side of the ball and as the league changes, right? Mm-hmm. Part of the reason we're having this conversation and part of the reason this conversation is fascinating is the league is changing. It used to be defense wins championships. Now you can make a really solid argument that, no, you need a great offense to punch your ticket, or at least you need to be elite on one side of the ball. So I'm going to pose the question to you. I'm going to get you started with this, Jake. If you're talking about which side of the ball is the most important factor to the Seahawks' success in 2021, are you taking offense or defense?
Well, I honestly would take offense, because I do believe that when you look at all the sum of their parts of last year, the defense played better in the second half of the season. But why did they lose? Because their offense went into a tailspin. Their offense, the second half of the season, really, really struggled. And your quarterback was not performing at the same level in which we have been accustomed to seeing him perform and what he did in the earlier part of the season. I think that was a big part of it. I believe that their identity, or lack thereof, and their conviction who they are, I believe that that was a big reason offensively why they struggled and why they didn't get further into the playoffs. So I believe that that part of it is big, and you're going to be looking at the how successful the implementation of this new offense, this new offensive identity that they will carry. That's going to be what I believe this season will hinge on. However, I'm going to make the argument that when you look at the defense, they've got a lot to prove.
Yeah.
They have a lot to prove in this situation, and it is you ask the question. The second half of the season, Stacey, was it real? Was the second half real? Was it a barometer of that defense truly turning a corner? I believe in some aspects it was. I also don't believe that this defense is as dominating as they showed statistically in the second half of the season. I believe that they faced a lot of very poor offenses in the second half of the season that allowed their stats or their numbers to increase dramatically. And I would say that this defense, the reason why it has a lot to prove is because there's a lot riding on this year. And you're always competing for Super Bowls. But you look at the way that this roster, this defensive roster is constructed, Stacey, they haven't gone young on defense. Like, you can't say that. This isn't a bunch of young players. They've gone for veterans. Pete Carroll, John Schneider, they've gone for veteran guys. And those veteran guys carry heavier, pricier contracts. I mean, you look at Bobby Wagner, Carlos Dunlap. You look at Hyder Jr., you look at Jamal Adams and his deal that will eventually come down the line. You look at Quandre Diggs, Puna Ford. These guys, they're heavier contracts. They're not rookies or guys that are playing on their first contract that's a lot easier to absorb. Their defense isn't built through the draft. It is built through veteran players. So the reason why I think they have a lot to prove is I don't think they have a lot of excuses not to be good, not to be a top 15 defense. And if we're hearing this from Pete Carroll, cut number one, we're highlighting this during the season, I think we got issues.
It was Wednesday night. Kenny had a meeting with the guys, and he had the players all go through their own position and what they had to do in some of our base calls. And it was one of the most remarkable defensive meetings I've ever been in that every single guy just riffed on what he's supposed to do, who he's supposed to communicate with, how it's supposed to work out, what you can count on coming from me, and then the next guy, and then the next guy, and one after another after another. It was like one of the great meetings of accountability.
So, the great meetings of accountability.
Like the seven wonders of the world. You don't hear about it often, but it's one of the great meetings of accountability.
That's
There's
right.
only a couple of them.
That's right. That monumental moment that happened in the middle of the year last year, that can't happen. They've got to hit the ground running. They've got to get going, Stacey. They have to be a top 15 level defense this year. I didn't say top 10. I think if they are a top 15 defense and they consistently are able to generate sacks and they are able to put pressure on the quarterback, create turnovers, they've got a chance to they have done their part. They have set up the offense for success. And I don't believe that they have a lot of excuses like they did last year. I think last year they had legit excuses. There had a lot of moving parts, Jamal Adams being new, guys getting injured early on in the season. They had some excuses that you could say, okay, yeah, they need to figure this out. But this year, I don't believe they carry that same excuse because Jamal Adams has been in this system for a year.
He's about to get paid,
and you've had this core group on your defense play together for a year.
Yeah.
It has to be different.
I like that argument. I like the idea that, like, look, the offense is where you've got a lot of your rising stars. And in a league that is so focused on scoring early, scoring often, you're going to need to outscore opponents. You need to lean into your strength, and you've got a lot of strengths on offense. You got two wide receivers that had 1,000 yards last year. You've got one of the best quarterbacks in the league. You've got this offensive line that you traded one of just a handful of draft picks to make an addition to. An invaluable piece of draft capital that you were longing for, you parted ways with it to add to that, that needs to be your bread and butter, but that the defense has a bit more of a clock than a rebuilding defense has. This isn't a defense where it's like, yeah, we went out there, we made a couple picks, and these are all young guys that are learning. No, this is a linebacker you're paying $18 million to. This is a safety you may be paying close to that money to, mm-hmm. and you traded away two first-round picks to. These are veterans that have been in the league and know better that you're bringing in. So these are guys where the clock has started, not just age-wise, but as far as your expectations for them on defense. So it needs to be good. The way I look at it, Jake, is similar. I think that the success does hinge technically more on offense. So I agree with you there. Where I kind of use the analogy to bring the to make the defense the important part is I look at the divisional round teams from this past season. Packers, Rams, Bills, Ravens, Chiefs, Browns, Bucks, Saints. In every single game, the better offense advanced. Every single game. And when it came to the conference championship, you saw the same thing. The two teams that were in the Super Bowl are two of the highest scoring teams in the league last year. And I remember seeing so many comments on the text line when we were talking about how important it was to score. And I would say, you guys need to beat these high scoring teams. The best teams in the league are putting up 29, 30, 31 points per game. They will advance. They will get to a Super Bowl. And you need to do that too. And people would say, Stacey, you just got to outscore your opponent. You got to do more than that. You have to do more than that in today's NFL. The teams that advanced were the highest scoring teams.
Yeah, this league's changing.
Obviously, the Packers were the highest scoring team. They were knocked out in the NFC conference round, but the Chiefs and the Bucks were both averaging around between 28 and 31 points per game was about what they ended up averaging for the season. But the team that won the Super Bowl was the team that of the four remaining conference teams had by far the best defense, and it wasn't close.
Right.
It was not close.
They had the best complement, right?
So I'm looking at it as like, if you're looking at boarding your train to the Super Bowl, having your offense be able to score early and often and outscore an opponent and put you in a safe spot with those games, that punches your ticket. In today's NFL, I'm not talking about 2013's NFL, today's NFL, that offense punches you your ticket to the Super Bowl. Your defense is what finally completes that, though.
Mm-hmm.
That's what you need. We saw that on full display. That defensive line is a big part of the reason they won the Super Bowl.
Yeah, a huge part of the reason, right? So you that's why this defense, to me, is so important that they are able to establish themselves early on. When you're going through this tough stretch and their schedule is tough, I think that you're looking at this defense to really take the next step and to really grow up and build upon what they did in the second half of the season with their pass rush and having a consistent pass rush. They added more to that defensive line, which brings me great optimism. But overall, in the back end of things, there's not a whole lot of excuses that I am willing to hear. I know that you're having a cornerback battle right now, and a lot of guys that you're not sure what they're going to be and how they're going to step up, but they have the veteran talent around them where I don't believe that that's a good enough excuse for them to not perform at a high level. And so when you go down this road, you can't start the season being one of the worst, historically the worst defense in the league in terms of total yards.
100%
you were. And, you know, a lot of attention was on Ken Norton Jr., you know, until that second half of the season started. Then the pressure went off because they went on this amazing run. And the question remains, was that run for real? Is that a turn? Is that indicative of this defense taking that turn and taking the right positive steps forward? I hope so. But I think there is a lot riding on the defense to show that they have a lot to prove. And for Pete Carroll, who is ultimately a defensive-minded head coach, he sees everything through a defensive-minded lens. The goal is to always have a great defense and to have a complementary defense. And we talked about this yesterday. I believe that John Schneider and Pete Carroll, more than ever before, recognize where the team is at and recognize that they need to help this offense be as explosive and be more offensive focused, but they need this defense to complement what they're doing. And they need this defense. Pete Carroll needs this defense to be in lockstep with his vision and the way that this group performs on defense. You can't have a group that doesn't look like Pete Carroll. You can't have a group that Pete Carroll's looking and scratching his head at and going, man, these guys just don't know how to play our style of ball. That cannot happen this year.
This hour of Jake and Stacey is brought to you by Muckleshoot Casino. It's time for three questions. DJ, brought to you by Tila Mortgage. Take it away.
It's time for three questions.
Can't wait for it.
Every day at 11:15, three burning questions for Jake Heaps and Stacey Rost.
That's the dumbest question you could ask. What?
I just got to say, the way that I phrased that sounded like DJ is brought to us by Tila Mortgage. Like, thank you, Tila Mortgage, for bringing us DJ today. DJ, first of all, thank you for being here.
Thank you. Hold on. Thank you.
Before DJ, you get to your amazing three questions here. I want to address this text from the 360.
Okay.
Tampa Bay's defense was the best unit altogether in the playoffs. They had a great defense because of a low-paid quarterback in Tom Brady, not an overpaid QB.
No.
I'm sorry. That is factually, absolutely incorrect. That is not what happened. Their offense was built together because of the quarterback taking a lesser salary, being $25 million on the cap. It was not their defense. You want to know why their defense was so good?
Because they're on rookie deals.
Rookie
and their
deals.
Top picks.
They built through the draft.
Vita Vea, James White, all these guys were on
Vita
rookie
Vea,
deals.
Devin White, you look at their entire secondary.
Franchise tag with Barrett.
First round contracts. Sorry. Wrong argument. Show up again. Try again.
Woo.
All right, I'm going with an audible on question one. Because I'm reading the text line like you, Jake, and it just made me think of this question. Why does Russell Wilson, the only player to get the blame for the recent playoff struggles by the Seahawks?
Because he looked, I'm going to answer honestly. I mean,
I hope you would answer honestly.
No,
I'm
answering honestly, but I don't want people to take this as like Russell Wilson isn't good. Russell Wilson's one of the best quarterbacks in the NFL. He also had a very weird slump last year, and he played bad football. The timing of his comments about the offensive line couldn't have been worse. He played the worst football of his life and then came out and said, like, oh, the offensive line, it's really been struggling. Now, what's weird about it, and we've talked about this, is both of us are Seattle natives. We've been listening to Seahawks conversations our whole life, and that includes since Russell Wilson has been here. How many times, Jake, have you and I, just as fans talking with friends, heard other fans say, oh, that offensive line? For the last, like, 10 years, it's been a conversation. Now, the weird part is that once Russell said it, people were like, who the heck are you to talk about this offensive line? And some people, it was because they felt like he shouldn't have talked about teammates. And other people just completely forgot that they used to bag on the offensive line, too. It completely escaped their mind. That said, the timing wasn't great, Russ. He's getting a lot of the blame because he played poorly and was a big part of a struggling offense.
Yeah, but
to be honest.
I think it's very much why that is the case, why he is getting the blame for that. But I also believe that it is recency bias. You know, I've seen a lot of texts or a lot of comments that Russ just isn't good in the playoffs. What are we talking about? Do you guys not remember 2018 and 2019? Russell wasn't the reason why the Seahawks lost those 2 years in the playoffs. In 2019, the conversation is, why didn't you get Russell Wilson started sooner? He single-handedly almost brought the team back in Lambeau Field from a 24-point deficit. They were on a two-minute drive. They are a Malik Henry drop away from potentially going down the field and scoring. Do you forget that?
Also,
yes,
the defense
you do.
Couldn't get off the field. Also,
oh,
Jimmy
okay.
Graham
so,
9 yards on third and
there
eight.
You go.
Be
what
careful.
About
never talk about the best tight end?
What
in
about
Seahawks
what
history.
About the what about the Cowboys game in 2018? What was the conversation there? Oh, we didn't get Russell Wilson was great in that game. We didn't get the ball in his hands enough. Like, what are we talking about?
They also gave up 200 rushing yards. Essentially,
I understand. We talk about the here and now. We talk about last year, but let's keep it in context. Last year did not play well. last year in the second half of the season did not play well. Has to be better and can't have performances like that of last year. But to say that he's not good in the playoffs, that's just not true.
Not even not good in the playoffs. Y'all, I know that some of you guys listening are going to be like, I'm sorry, are you kidding me? There have been people texting in at times saying Russell Wilson just isn't good. Russell Wilson,
yeah,
not
that,
good.
Honestly, but that,
I don't know how to save those people.
You can't.
You can't help them if you don't want to help yourself.
Number two.
We'll also say about that Cowboys game, Jake, that was another example that the defense couldn't get off the field. But I guess that's...
Yeah, Russell, how about that Wilson's third and 14 where Dak Prescott takes a quarterback sneak and takes it to the house? How about that one? That might be a problem.
Pretty cool.
I like Angry Jake.
Okay.
You guys keep doing it. 7-10, 7-10.
Just...
I love it.
We need to start doing this board show prep.
Yeah,
I feel like
yeah.
we need to... He does such a good job.
Let's
getting
lie.
Us
Let's
we
be like Jake. A texter texted in and said Russell Wilson is the worst quarterback he's ever seen. What do you think about the Seahawks offense?
It's not just about that. It's just stuff that's just factually incorrect. Like that texter that talked about, you know, the Tampa Bay roster construction. It's not true. Like, don't just say stuff. Just look it up. Look it up.
Well, I think that narrative, sorry, DJ, we're running into the timing. I think that narrative also stems from the idea that, oh, Tom Brady took a discount. And if Russell Wilson wants to succeed like Tom Brady has succeeded, he needs to take a discount. Tom Brady has at times taken less than he could. He's been the best quarterback in football, and he has not been paid as the top quarterback in football throughout the course of his career. But he has always been the top paid quarterback or the top paid player on his team. He's not taking, like, you know, $15 million so the team can spend more. He's still taking a good-sized chunk of the salary cap. He's just leaving some on the table.
And the team and the player have worked it out where they have an understanding. And also, Tom Brady, what he's been doing is taking a bunch of extensions. So, yeah, it's lesser on your salary cap, but you're getting more money up front down the road. So it's not like Tom Brady has been this absolute saint. It's just... They've had a gentleman's handshake in terms of the New England Patriots and Tom Brady, how they're going to handle their contract negotiations, and eventually it came back to bite them towards the end of it all. His cap hit became so big that it was tough to maneuver around. So and Tampa Bay's doing that once again. They're trying to do that with Tom Brady right now. So I think there's a lot to that equation, but yeah.
All right, question two really quick. Adam Jude at Seattle Times just said on Twitter that Julio Rodriguez reminds him of DK Metcalf. Do you guys think this is a fair comparison?
I don't know. I mean, I think that there is a uniqueness in the sense that Julio Rodriguez and DK Metcalf are genuinely who they are. They don't go out of their way to try and be flashy and try to be... something that they're not. They have unique, fun personalities. So like DK Metcalf with the whole binky thing, right? When he came out as a rookie. And he wears a binky because he says that, although I'm young, I play like a grown man, right? Making a statement with that. That is a unique thing to DK Metcalf. He's not going out of his way like Chad Ochocinco and being ridiculous on the field and doing all these crazy touchdown dances and all that. And everything's about me, me, me. They just have this natural charisma to them. And I think that that's what Adam Jude is pointing to in Julio Rodriguez. He just seems to have this natural fun aspect, this air to him that people gravitate towards.
Also, in every description, sounds like just a physical freak. Sounds like a guy that could go out there and just completely dominate. So, summed it up well there, Jake. The Mariners, speaking of, made a couple roster moves. We'll cover those with Mike Salk right around the corner. Do not go anywhere.
You're listening to Jake and Stacy.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacy Ross.
Mike Salk joins us now, brought to you by Jafco Plumbing and Sewer. Mike, before I get to these Mariners roster moves, two of note. You were out at, there was like a media batting practice
yes.
the other day. How did you do? And I'm so sorry that Jake and I couldn't make it and bring our own athleticism and abilities to the event to make 7-10 look great.
Well, I know Jake was in peak athletic form as he's
yes.
working on the What is it you're doing again? What's it called?
American Ninja Warrior.
You
did it. Yeah.
You did it?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
How did it go?
Yeah.
Has it aired?
No,
he's not allowed
yet.
To say how it went.
You're not allowed to say.
I'm not allowed to say.
Did I miss
how well I did? But
Curtis
but
I'm and I
sure
tried to
well.
Get clues by being like, so was the water really cold? Or like...
I couldn't tell you.
Yeah.
All I can tell you is that that button at the end felt really good.
I bet it did.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's so nice of them to bring you over to it after the whole thing was over and let you press it.
Very sweet.
It was a blast. First of all, rule for life. If Can't anyone ever there. Offers you a chance to take batting practice at a major league field, you say yes.
Well, first of all, Jake and I couldn't because of scheduling conflicts.
Obviously. Yes.
So I will be reaching out to Kevin Martinez
as
himself.
Will I.
But I am saying over the air, I am begging if it can work out, please, can we have another chance?
The two of
please.
Us.
I've been lucky in my life to get to play on three different major league fields plus a minor league complex. And all three times will be in the memory bank for the rest of my life. I played in a media game at Fenway, media game at Yankee Stadium, and have taken batting practice a couple times at Safeco and now T-Mobile. And honestly, all five times, whatever it's been, are like tied for some of the best moments of my life. I mean,
incredible.
Plus we got to take some BP and shag balls down at spring training a few years ago, which was great. Scott Service threw us BP, which was awesome. Brock had a lot of trouble bunting. Scott was finally just like, just hold the bat out and I'll hit it. It was great. It was really fun. And this is something the Mariners are offering. I think it's like $1,800 for 10 people. So you get a group of 10, it's $180 a person. And you can take an hour of batting practice. Man, it's awesome.
That is so cool. Why would you not do that? Crazy story. My dad got a chance to do that. He was he worked for Farmers Insurance at one point, and he did this, and he actually got a contract from the Mariners.
What?
Because he was raking.
To do
Wait,
what?
Hang on.
To play for the Aqua Sox.
Are you serious?
Dead serious.
When was this? Yeah.
Back,
I mean,
way Jake's back
an athletic family.
Yeah, way back in the day.
I'm from an athletic family.
That's not true.
It's not true.
It's not true at all.
My dad was a bartender.
So my visions is that I'm going to go there and do so well because it's just in the blood.
No.
It probably won't. But
well, I'll tell you, it was pretty cool just to see people out there. Gallant was out there and Michael Bumpus was out there. By far the – Shannon did great.
Shannon,
made good contact. But it's just funny, Angie Mentink is there, and, you know, Angie's not dressed for the occasion. She was wearing, like, high-heeled boots or something, and we guilted her into taking a few hacks, and she can still
embarrass you guys.
Swipe it. Angie is such a beautiful swing. Oh, my God. She's awesome. First of all, Angie's one of my favorite people in the world.
Yeah.
I just love her, and she's so talented. And,
I would have killed to have seen that.
Was
she wearing like regular shoes or what?
No,
she's honestly high heel, not like stilettos or something, but she was wearing a shoe with a heel. And she's still, and her kids can both really hit.
Yeah,
I saw
the video on Twitter yesterday. It was impressive.
Great.
Considering that it was a media event, I'm just happy how many people like made contact with the ball.
Yeah, everyone did. I think. Yeah, everyone made contact.
I would have.
My back hurts today. I'm not going to lie.
I bet.
Plus, most of us were concerned it would screw up our golf swing. Like, is this going to mess up my golf swing worse than it already is? So, it was a lot of fun. And kudos to the Mariners for doing this. I mean,
it's a
new thing they're offering where you can go over and take hacks at a major league. You will realize just how hard it is to hit the ball even close to out of a major league park.
Do you know how long you're there for this?
It's an hour.
And you get an hour.
Yeah, you get an hour.
Wow.
Yeah,
that's
you buy an hour.
People.
That's
pretty
incredible.
Cool. Yeah, it's a good deal.
All right, let's talk about some of these roster moves. Luis Torrens, option to AAA Tacoma. Jose Marmolejos, designated for assignment, bringing up a couple other guys to take their place. I think for a while the writing had been on the wall with at least the catcher situation.
Yeah, Torrens has been bad. I don't know how else to say that. And whereas, look, Marmolejos not working out, who cares? A placeholder guy. We talked about this yesterday, right? When the Marmolejoses of the world and the Jack Mayfields and the Sam Haggertys of the world, most people listening don't even know who I'm talking about. That's okay. Those guys aren't part of your plan. They're filler.
True.
They're what Bill Belichick termed jags, right? They're just a guy.
It's true.
If they don't work out, it's okay. You just find somebody else who's just like them to take their place, and eventually some of them are fine.
It's still hard to watch when you,
that's fine.
You see them on the lineup and you
understood.
Know that there's this black hole in your lineup.
But that's a short-term problem that you're waiting to fill.
Put it in perspective.
The catching thing is an actual issue, right? Who is going to be the long-term catcher on this team? They traded for Torrens because they liked him. They traded for him because of more of his bat. It's certainly not his glove.
Yeah, I remember
kind of a butcher behind the plate.
Yeah.
By all accounts, he can hit. And he did last year. don't know what's wrong with him this year. Maybe he just needs to go get his confidence back in AAA and come back the player he's been. But he has been one of the – I mean, he's looked like those guys I just mentioned where he didn't have a shot up there. So I like the move. I think it's time. You can bring up some other placeholders essentially now. And they brought back the kid Nottingham who was in Milwaukee and he was here and then back in Milwaukee. But, you know, eventually it's Cal Raleigh's job to win or lose, right? I mean, and that's going to take some time. But Raleigh is one of the dudes, right? He's part of the core that you're hoping kind of turns this thing into what the Mariners are going to be. So what did we see today? Nothing, really. I don't mean to minimize the news, but like whether Jose Marmolejos is up or here or down somewhere else, like who cares?
It's not minimizing it. I think it's helping people make sense of like, does this matter or what names matter?
In the old Brock and Salk, this would be no news, right?
Like,
good news, bad news, no news. This is no news except for Terenz. That's bad news that he wasn't able to seize the catcher's job while he was here. They certainly gave him enough opportunity. He's gotten a whole lot more starts than Tom Murphy has. And unfortunately, he's gone the other way with it. So, you know, you're biding your time. You're hoping to make sure that Raleigh is going to be 100% ready when he comes up because by all counts, he can really hit. But yeah, a combination of no news and some slight bad news, I would say there.
Now, that part of it really intrigues me because we've heard from Shannon Dreyer. I mean, this was before even Kelnick got brought up that it was even maybe even the thought that maybe Cal Raleigh gets to the big league club before Kelnick does. So with this transition, I'm not sad that he's not being brought up right now in this shakeup or whatnot. But realistically, when do you think that might be the case?
You may wait a little bit till the team gets hotter. I don't know. I mean, I think at some point there's a fear of just having too many guys on your team that are so young.
Right.
And I'm not saying Nottingham is going to come in and light the world on fire.
I've got my eye on Jose Godoy.
Godoy.
He is Jackson. He loves him. We went and saw Kelnick out in Tacoma. And Godoy was lighting it up, and so you know we were yelling for him, and so I'm a big
sure
believer in him. I've got some bold takes for Godoy this weekend.
I believe that. I don't know the thinking around that and why you wait, but you know if I'm Jerry DePoto at some point here, I guess I'm looking to maybe stem the tide. Are there just some professional hitters out there that you can go find for not having to give up too much, but bring back someone who can just be a professional, give you a professional at bat? I mean, we've seen some of those guys over the years. For some reason, the name that always sticks with me is someone like Seth Smith, right? He's really just a lefty platoon guy. He's not an all-star, not a great player, but the league used to be littered with these players.
Yeah.
Gabe Gross. And I used to be able to come up with like 100 of these. Like, they're not great. They're not all-stars. They have a deficiency. Maybe they need to be platooned. Maybe they are poor defensively or they don't have enough power. Whatever they have a negative that keeps them from being a star.
Yeah.
But they can hit. And they can hit 280. And they can like get you, you know, they'll get on base a little bit and just give you a professional at bat where they take a few pitches. And I think it's a bummer not to have more of those guys. I know, and it's not a Mariners problem, it's a baseball problem.
Correct.
Those guys are gone from baseball. And at some point, I'd love to have a conversation about when a team, someone, is going to try to experiment in doing this the other way and say, all right, guess what? I'm going to bring in a bunch of 300 hitters and see what happens. Like, I don't care about your home run power. I don't care about your on base. I'm going to bring in some guys who get singles and see if we can string together enough hits to actually win a game.
Yeah, we talked about this with Tim Kirchen yesterday a little bit and just the evolution of the game. And we'll talk about that a little bit more at 1 o'clock, just taking a deeper dive into that because it's going to have to happen, to be honest with you.
I agree with you. But for the Mariners specifically, I would love to see Jerry just go out there and find a pro. And yeah, you might take a few at bats at second or first. I don't know what position that person's going to play.
Yeah.
But if you just find somebody to just give you some professional at bats, and I think it would help everyone on the team kind of get closer to their potential.
Mike, I hate to put you on the spot, and especially in just the last couple seconds here, but for the sake of brevity, this is going to be a yes or no question. It's also a yes or no question to get us primed and ready for the conversation we're about to jump into.
Okay.
Have we seen the best of Russell Wilson already?
The best?
Yes.
Yes.
Oh, like as in like the peak.
The answer for me is because of the speed.
Have you seen the peak of Russell Wilson?
It's just because of the speed. I think he could be a better passer than he's been, but as an overall player with what his legs have brought you, I don't think we'll ever see the overall package that we've seen.
All right, we're going to jump right into that conversation. Just around the corner, do not go anywhere. You guys can join it to 710-710 Mac and Jack's text line. Have we seen the best of Russell Wilson? It's coming your way next.
You're listening to Jake and Stacy.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacy Ross.
All right, we are taking you around the diamond thanks to Shane Company, your friend in the jewelry business. The Mariners begin their series against the San Diego Padres tonight. Chris Flexen will be making the start. First pitch is at 7:10 p.m. with the pregame show starting at 6 p.m. right here on 710 ESPN Seattle. And that's Around the Diamond, brought to you by Shane Company, your friend in the jewelry business. This hour of Jake and Stacy, by the way, brought to you by Muckleshoot Casino. Now, I remember last season, Marcellus Wiley was talking about Russell Wilson's phenomenal start to the year. And in cut number three right here, he said something that got a lot of people kind of worked up and irritated here in Seattle.
Nope, he ain't gonna win it. I love how you say back on track. What happened to it? What happened to the train? One bad week.
Two.
Only one chew. Two. He won't get a choo-choo. Yeah, he's gonna lose it like he finds a way to lose it every single time. And this is not about Russell Wilson playing bad. It's about Russell Wilson at times going from hot to lukewarm. And then a narrative is created by someone who is hot all the way through, and then that person comes and pounces on the MVP.
That's exactly what it ended up happening. Russell Wilson was by far the MVP favorite through the first several weeks of the season. Was on fire, setting all kinds of records, leading the league in touchdowns while also throwing, I believe, before the Cardinals game, just 2-3 interceptions. That all changed. Ended up having, I think, a career high in interceptions, at least since his rookie season in 2012. Still ended up with maybe also a career high in touchdowns, Jake, around 44-ish.
Yes,
40. But that touchdown interception percentage, not great. Second half to the season, not great. And Marcellus Wiley, unfortunately, ended up being a little bit right with that idea that Russell Wilson
ended up being very right.
Would not end up finishing his MVP campaign. This caused Paul Gallant, our co-worker, he hosts obviously the Paul Gallant Show and then Danny and Gallant, to question and ask listeners, hey, have we seen the best of Russell Wilson? Paul said, yeah, he thinks that we might have, and it makes him concerned. And he said, I know that Russell Wilson is a great player. He can change that. Russell Wilson can change that, but he is worried that we have seen the best of Russell Wilson. In part, he pointed to one specific stat, which was Russell Wilson's second half falling off, that the yards per pass attempt and completion in both of the last seasons, 2019 and 2020, dwindled from the beginning of the year to the end of the season.
Mm-hmm.
And he also points to, you know, I'm a little concerned about whether Russell Wilson can become a pocket passer given his height and not just lean on his mobility. And that mobility becomes a lot harder to lean on when you get into your 30s.
Yeah, I think that when you ask that question, you know, Paul says, yes, he has reached his peak, but he can get better. That, to me, it's either yes or no. Have we seen the best of him? Can he improve? And to me, the answer is no, we have not seen the best of Russell Wilson. Salk, just in the last segment, said yes, because of the total package in terms of being at his peak physically and being able to be an elite runner and an elite thrower. From that aspect, I can see why Salk would say that. And then I would say it's unfortunate that he didn't have an offense like we've seen today with some of these young players that really highlight those strengths and really allow some of those guys from early on to be great passers in the league, right? Russell Wilson was phenomenal in his running ability. They highlighted that strength, but they were very conservative in the way that they threw the ball in the early part of his career. And they had a very, you know, run focused offense, right? So we didn't get to see that side of it. But at this stage of his career, I say no, because I believe that Russell Wilson has the ability to be a very consistent quarterback. And in this offense that we're going to see with Shane Waldron, there's a lot of pressure on Shane Waldron, as we keep pointing out, with this offense, this, with this offense, that. But I believe that you finally have an offense that has the ability to truly highlight all of Russell Wilson's strengths. And when you see Russell Wilson go through some of these downturns that Marcellus Wiley said, and he's right, there are times where Russell Wilson, he is the best quarterback in the league, right? I mean, we're talking about Russell Wilson, Patrick Mahomes, who's the best quarterback. That's Russ at his best. Then there's times where he has games, or last year, the second half, the entire stretch, where he is lukewarm. And how do you fix that? And I think that when you talk about an offense and as an offense coordinator, there are ways that you can help get your superstar quarterback back on track. And that is such an important element to that equation. And I don't think he's had that in his career. I also believe that when you're looking at Russell Wilson and what he can be, you're looking at the first 8 weeks of the season, and can he be that way the entire year? Can he have a Tom Brady, Peyton Manning, Drew Brees type of year where you are dominating and spinning the rock at a high level all the way through? And I believe the answer is yes, absolutely he can do that. And a lot of people want to talk about his lack of mobility or what have you, but we also have to look at what Russell Wilson did this last year, right? His uptick in production with running the football, it went up, right? I mean, he rushed for over 500 yards this last year. That's no small feat for any quarterback. I think he was third or second in the league.
Yeah,
in,
but the
in
production, it, he was second or he rushed and he was great, but you have to look at, and I know you're doing this, but like the full total production, second half of the season, Russ did not look good. He looked good at
right.
times, but like it was a problem. And I don't care if he's putting up rushing yards and if he's still producing individual stats.
I'm talking about statistically.
You're just saying like
athleticism is absolutely still there, where he hasn't all of a sudden just become decrepit and can't run the ball anymore. And now he has to solely rely, his game on from the pocket. I do believe that there is a transition here. But, you know, one of the, you know, referring back to Drew Brees coming and watching the workout, you know, one of the things that Drew said to me as he was watching, he goes, man, I promise you, watch the next 5 years of this guy. You haven't seen what this guy can do. And I obviously believe that. I work very closely with Russell, and I see that, and I know that. But Drew Brees was adamant that these next 5 years are going to be special for him. He is just getting started. That's what his words were. And if Drew Brees, one of the greatest passers of all time, is saying that about Russell Wilson, then I think everybody else, look, buckle up and we'll see. But I don't believe that Russell Wilson has hit his prime, or you have seen the best of Russell Wilson. I think that in Drew Brees' words, he's just getting started.
All right, we're going to keep this conversation going a bit with Michael Bumpus, who's going to join us next. I've also got plenty of questions about what this offense can look like in 2021. Michael Bumpus joins us in just a few minutes. Don't go anywhere.